I have good news for you today. Who could use a little good news? Anybody else? Oh, man, I don't know if I even need good news, but I should probably hear it anyway. I just almost feel like, I feel like God's favorite this last week. You know, I prayed for this, and not to say that my prayer affects the weather. But James did say Elijah was just a man like you and me, and he prayed and the Lord shut up the skies. So that's the Bible. That's not me. But, you know, I told you the testimony about how I had kind of a long summer and camp was at the end of summer. So I kind of was really praying for a late breaking summer in September, October. You're welcome. It's just been beautiful. I've had my boat out more than I have it out for the whole summer. Might even go out again today. Is it going to be in the 80s? Oh, my goodness. Thank you, Lord Jesus. And Molly, because we think like this, like the center, we're the center of the universe. But Molly says, I almost feel like God's just repaying you for doing a camp this year. I said, well, I don't know if that's true, but I'll take it. I'll take it. Anytime to feel like the Lord's favorite. How many know the Lord really does love you? He's looking after you. He takes care of you. And we got another camp for next year, and it's July 10th through the 13th. My ultimate best day to do a camp. Not only that, but there was another kids camp that did their own, and they called us last week and said they want to join in with our camp, as well as several other churches. And so, all right, I'm excited for it next year. So that's a good sign. Well, I want to read another one of Jesus' faithful promises. And one of those that's, it's almost too good to be true. It's almost so big in his language that you stop and you say, well, is that really true? And I think absolutely it is. It's told in three different gospels, three different versions of it. The longest one is Mark's, so the oldest version is a lot longer. Matthew kind of edited it down, and Matthew kind of points the focus instead on a young boy's father. He points it back on the disciples. And so the story goes like this. It says, and when they came to the crowd, a man approached Jesus and knelt before him. Lord, have mercy on my son. I love that phrase. It's that we had a song back in the 80s, Kyrie eleison. That's what he says in Greek. Lord, have mercy. Lord, have mercy on me and have mercy on my son. He said, he has seizures and is suffering greatly. He often falls into the fire or into the water. And I brought him to your disciples, but they could not heal him. Say, could not. I know that doesn't seem like the most important word in that sentence, does it? Could not. But it is. It kind of encapsulates, there's kind of three parts to this story, and each one of them ends with that same word. It's a verb in Greek, which is dunamai, which not only sounds like, it's where we get the word dynamite. So it means in Greek the ability or the power or the potential to do something. And so it's focusing in this passage, in Mark, like I said, it focuses on the father and his relationship with Jesus. In Matthew, he focuses in on the fact that this man brought his son who needed prayer, and he brought him to the disciples, and they could not. They didn't have it. They didn't have the ability. They didn't have the power. They didn't have whatever it took to set this young kid free. And I have to kind of unravel some of the Bible language too. You always kind of have to put yourself way back in the mindset of somebody that lived 2,000 years ago. You have to understand, they didn't know about neurology back in those days. They didn't know what the brain did. They didn't even know what blood did and oxygen. And so you always have to just kind of filter this story. This is a very first century way of talking about things. The description later on in Mark, it really points out that this young man had an issue that was due to a demon. That wouldn't have been surprising for anybody back in those days, whether they were Jewish or Roman. The Romans just assumed that demons were responsible for everything, and so that's how they taught. The word that it uses in Greek is seleniazomai, which has to do with the moon. And so my best description, because of how he describes this, is that this boy had epilepsy. But the way they would describe it in those days is they would blame it on the moon. That's where we get the word lunatic or moonstruck. So if you had any kind of a mental illness or a neurological disorder, that they didn't know how to describe. They said, well, I don't know what could be causing it. I don't see anything wrong with him, right? If you were there, you would have said the same thing. Maybe it's the moon. Maybe the moon's causing this boy, or maybe it's a demon that's throwing him down, because they didn't understand. Could you imagine seeing somebody with epilepsy for the first time with no other frame of reference? I would have said that looks like a spiritual. And so anyway, but that whole interpretation, wherever you take that story, it really doesn't matter. What matters is this story is this man brought his son to the disciples, whom Jesus had already given authority, not only to cast out demons, but also to minister, to cure diseases. Their word is therapeuo, which means to care for. Not that they're the healers, but they can at least pray and minister to him. But this man brought his boy to the disciples, and they couldn't do what Jesus had already asked them to do. They couldn't do it. And so in the second part of the sentence, Jesus says something that... It sounds really mean, but it's more compassionate in its original language. He says, you unbelieving and perverse generation. And it's hard to tell whether he's talking now about the father or the disciples, because they're unbelieving or spun around, or just everybody in his generation. Some, they just didn't get it. He said, how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy here to me. And Jesus rebuked the demon. That's where we get that it was a demon. And it said, and it came out of the boy, and he was healed at that moment. And then the disciples came. And so was he delivered of a demon, or was he healed, or both? To me, it really doesn't matter. The point is what he's saying to his disciples and what's going on in them. I really think in Matthew's version of this story, we're supposed to see ourselves as the disciples that couldn't set this boy free. Are you with me? Somebody brought somebody to us, and we couldn't help them, even though Jesus had put everything in us that we needed in order to help them. But somehow we just couldn't do it. And so he said, and then the disciples, here's where it turns to Jesus and the disciples. Then the disciples came to Jesus in private. So now it's just Jesus and the disciples. And they asked him, why couldn't we drive it out? There's that word again, dunamai. Why didn't we have the dynamite? What happened to our potential? What happened to our power? Why could we not get it done? Why did we not have the ability? And Jesus replied, it's because you have so little faith. Truly I tell you, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you. Say that last word. Nothing will be impossible. Nothing will be impossible for you. That word impossible is the opposite. It's nothing. There will be nothing in your life which God has called you to do and given you to do, which you will not be able to do. It's that word dunamai again. There's nothing. So impossible is, it may not be the best translation, because in English, I think of things that are impossible, things that are possible. And the idea that God is calling us to do things that are impossible, like moving a mountain. Does anybody realize this? I've thought about this since I was a kid, because I've heard this verse all growing up. Said, does that mean if I have enough faith, I can just go out to say Mount Hood, be moved? You ever tried it? Go ahead. Come back. Tell me how it goes. And so, you know, even in Jesus talking, there's sometimes in rhetoric, use a thing called hyperbole, which is to say something in an extreme or a word picture that's just larger than life, like a camel going through the eye of a needle. He's not talking about literal camels and literal needles. He's talking about big things and small things. And so here he uses a mustard seed, which is tiny. He says, how much faith? If you just have this much faith, you could move a mountain. You could move a mountain. I remember my father first teaching me in the car about atomic energy, and I'd ask him what it is, and he said, you know, wrapped up in just the tiniest little atom is enough power to melt all of the snow on Mount Hood. I didn't believe it until I turned 12, and a little mountain right across the river blew up. Now, I don't know, kids, if you weren't around during that time, you've always known about Mount St. Helens. Does anybody ever say that? They ask you where you're from. They say St. Helens. And they go, oh, the mountain? I said, no, not the mountain, the city. But it's in Washington, right? No, it's in Oregon. Well, how come it's called St. Helens? Because we can see it. That's why we're called St. Helens, because we have a view of the mountain. How many remember where it blew up? I grew up in Vancouver, so I was real close. We used to go camping with my cousins up on Mayfield Lake, right up on there. I remember we'd go and visit Spirit Lake, and Mount St. Helens used to look like Mount Hood. It used to have a point on it when I was a kid. I remember just thinking, you know, I can't imagine Mount Hood just being gone or being rounded off or just blown up. But that's what happened to Mount St. Helens. Come to find out, it wasn't as permanent as I thought it was. The whole top of it just blew up. I was out there as a kid. Fortunately, it blew the other direction. But I collected ash from the different eruptions. One of my first jobs actually was cleaning the ash out of people's gutters, because there was just, like, it snowed. There was inches of ash over everything, all the cars, all the plants. I remember thinking when I was a kid, this is never going to get cleaned up. And eventually it did. But, you know, if just looking at that mountain and remembering, that's the kind of power that God has, and that's just a little tiny mountain. And so it reminds us, because of Jesus still being alive and well in our life, if he can do that, then what is it that he can't do in your life? What are the mountains that we have? I don't know about you, but I run into situations all the time that are bigger than me. And that's when I have to turn back to Jesus and put my faith back in him. And just trust him and believe. He says, all you need is the faith of a mustard seed. Just a little tiny faith. And because it's not about the size of your faith, it's the size of your God. And so what keeps us from turning and having faith? I want to go back to the disciples again and just empathize with them. Not beat them up, because I never assume if I was there, I would have done any better than they did. If somebody had brought me that child, I probably would have shrugged and go, I don't know, that one's beyond me. You know, I can cure a cold, but I can't cure that. And that's too big. And, you know, one of the things that'll paralyze us is when we look at a situation and we just say, you know, not only is that too big for me, but if I try, think of this, if I try and if I pray and then it doesn't work, then everybody thinks that I've failed. One of the things that'll keep us from moving out in faith is fear of failure. This fear of failure. And just to remind you what I've said already, that God doesn't call us to do things, God does not call us to do things that are not within our ability. So this word, once again, he's not saying, I want you to do the impossible. He's saying, I want you to do the possible things. Well, I can't heal anybody. Oh, but I can pray for people, can't you? We can pray. We can be faithful. We can be diligent. You know, it takes faith sometimes just to get out of bed, just to get up and just to do those things. And so what he's calling us to do is the things that he's already given us the power to do. In Matthew chapter 10, the Bible says Jesus called his 12 disciples, and he called his 12 disciples to him, and he gave them authority to drive out impure spirits and to heal every disease and sickness. So that's what? 7 chapters earlier, he already gave them the authority. He's not calling them to do something that's beyond them. He says, I just want you to go out and I want you to pray for people. You know, what dawned on me is this passage and this promise is about not us branching beyond what we're able to do, but just even being able to do the things he's called us to do. Friends, there are all sorts of things that will paralyze us. Things that we know we ought to. But without faith, and when we have that fear that grips us, it's hard to even get up and mow the lawn. When we have that fear that grips us, it's hard to speak out. Sometimes it's hard to go to work in the morning. It's hard to do the things that we know we have the ability to do, but for some reason we just can't do it. But the Lord has gifted us with so many different things that we didn't know that we had the ability to do if we would just trust him and take him at his word. I can't tell you how many different situations that I found myself, and it just reminded me, but the last time was in our motorcycle class. And I don't know if, I think I've told you this story before, but I went to the motorcycle class without knowing how to ride a motorcycle. And I had been gifted a motorcycle. I didn't have a motorcycle yet, so I couldn't practice. And I should have taken the beginner course. Doesn't that sound right? But I didn't. I took the medium course, whatever it is, intermediate. Why would you do a stupid thing like that? Because the beginner course is on Sunday. And the only class on Saturday was the intermediate. And I thought, well, I rode mini bikes when I was a kid. I didn't know where the gears were. I didn't know it was one down and three up. I didn't even know how to shift. I read in the book. I said, okay, that's the clutch. That's the brake. I know what those are. And how hard can it be? That's what I said. How hard can it be? And so I showed up the first part of the class, and all these people in the class had been riding for years. They just needed to get their license, right? Except for me. And I got on that thing, kept dropping the clutch, stopping the thing, and going round and about. I finally figured out a trick. If you leave it in second gear, you can pretty much do the whole course. It'll even start out in second gear, at least the one I was on. And so I did it. It was horrible. Finally, they just grabbed the steering wheel and they said, it's been a long time since you've ridden yet. And I said, it's been never. So, so dumb. You would have been laughing at me so hard. I felt so silly. They had a break and I called Molly, just shaking. I just was so, the instructor wasn't very nice. He wasn't very happy that I was in the class. He was yelling at me and I called Molly and this just reminds me of T-ball tryouts. I was like a little kid, drove my bike up to the T-ball tryouts with my brother's mitt on the thing. I didn't know how to catch or throw, still don't. I didn't know how to do any of that stuff. All of a sudden, a ball hits me in the head, and I feel like I'm at T-ball practice all over again. But I'll tell you what, I just put my head down, and I prayed, had Molly pray for me. I didn't give up. I just kept going, and by the time it was done, sticking it, I did finally figure out where first is, but it was better in second. Made it through the cones, and at the end of the day, they had to give me my license because I had passed the test, barely. And the instructor was handing out the cards and waited just on purpose until everybody was gone to give me mine. And he says, Mike, he goes, you realize you should not be on the street yet, right? I said, yeah, I do. I just need the license and I'll practice. I had an empty neighborhood up by our house. I said, I'm going to practice until I'm safe at it. And I just said, man, that fear... If you let it take over, it'll keep you from doing anything good in life. I just remembered how easy it was just to go back to being a little kid at T-ball practice and just afraid to do anything. But friends, it doesn't matter what God has given you to do. If somebody comes to you and they need prayer, just stretch out by faith. You have more potential in you than you think you do. I don't think I could really say something to that person. Yes, you can. There is more potential in you than you think there is. Don't let fear be your limiter. The disciples had everything in them to set this boy free, but they were afraid. They wouldn't step out. And so remember what the father said? Lord, have mercy on me. It wasn't pride or ego that motivated the Lord. It was just his mercy, his compassion on this boy and on this father. And so God's mission is more important than it is to please people. Sometimes we're afraid to step out because we're afraid people are going to reject us. Well, sometimes they will, but we need to step out anyway. Sometimes we will be criticized. Oh my goodness, I was here how long ago was it? I just had to learn how to preach to a camera with like three people back there. I would tell a joke and no one would laugh. I had to imagine that people were at home just dying on their couch, laughing at the thing that I just said. It was by faith. And there's not a Sunday I could go by that I could say something that didn't make somebody mad. Oh, my goodness. I think you ever heard the phrase, you can't please all of the people all of the time? Well, during the pandemic, all of those people ended up at my church. Almost every week I get an email. Somebody was upset at somebody. And by the way, it wasn't all from the same direction. I had people mad at me from this side, people mad at me from this side. There was just no way. I thought, if I just aim down the middle, then maybe I'll make everybody mad or everybody happy. And instead, I made everybody mad. But I went back and you ever heard the speech that Theodore Roosevelt gave after he lost his election? This is after he was president. It's called The Man in the Arena. I just love this verse.